Barbara, is it necessary for a shift to happen, or can it be gradual? I think it's in the Katha Upanishad where they talk about knowledge, compare knowledge to the sunrise. And I think, in one way, it seems like that because the clarity, your clarity, and kind of the mind's nishta, the mind's commitment to your knowledge is something that grows and grows and becomes more and more pervasive to whatever thoughts and feelings are there in the mind. So the mind has less need to kind of run off on its own after its own raga dveshas, so that as the mind settles down, there's a sense of the mind spending more time just enjoying your own being. And so that's maturity, really. That's antakarana shuddhi. And that is something that I think happens gradually over time. On the other hand, there is, in reference to recognizing really yourself, rather than taking a certain type of thought modification, like a shantavritti, to be yourself, there is a time when you recognize the changelessness of your own presence. No matter what thoughts or feelings are there, your presence is self-evident and changeless. And once that's discovered, recognized, that recognition never changes, because the self never changes. Sometimes that takes a while, because people tend to think of a shantavritti, means a quiet thought or an absorbed thought or a meditative state, to somehow be yourself, or that you need a meditative state in order for yourself to be experienced. That's the type of thinking that tends to go on for a long time for whatever reason. So we're always trying to have a meditative state so that the self can be seen. But that's really incorrect. It means you actually haven't recognized yourself. So there's a shift there that has to take place. A shift, if we want to call it that, Barbara, using your language, where the ahankara, instead of always landing on different types of mental states, it now lands on the self that is always illumining whatever mental state is there. Mm. And that is your self, and that self never changes, and it's never covered by any mental state, whether it's an upset one or a tired one or a happy one. It doesn't make any difference at all. None of the experiences or perceptions or moods or emotions cover you. It's not possible. So that's the self that has to be recognized, and that's the self that seems, and that's the shift. Then once that's recognized, then everything else starts to fall into place, and then it's a matter of owning your knowledge that takes place over time as you're raga dveshas, your likes and dislikes drop off, and all of that whole process, you know. Likes and dislikes, your whole life you'll have likes and dislikes, but we don't really call them raga dvesha, because it's mithya. It's, I like this, I want this, but I don't get it, then that's fine. So, it's just a preference. So we use the word preference instead of a raga dvesha. If you say like or dislike, raga dvesha, what you mean is, if we're using the language carefully, what we mean by that is, I want this so that I can be happy. But for a jnani, that isn't what it is. I want this. I have some samskaras for it or whatever. But I don't have this. I'm not operating under the illusion that it will make me happy. You'd have to say, happily, I want this. And happily, I don't want this. Where my being isn't something that's at stake. You become more, Swamiji was just talking about this actually, Tom sent me a little speech that Swamiji, his birthday speech that Swamiji had given. I don't know if somebody had taken notes and sent me that speech or if it was actually a transcription or whatever it was. I'll find out from Nola later. But he was talking about object in the end, you know. It's really about objectivity, because even if you're a Mahatma for a Mahatma, what he calls the Anubhava is definitely going to be more. By Anubhava, I'm sure there, what he's meaning is that your own, the presence of your own being is more dominant to the mind. The mind enjoys, the mind itself enjoys and revels in the presence of your own being, so it becomes more and more dominant. But there's still punya and papa that go on exhausting themselves. And punya is going to give you a positive, joyful experiences, or experiences that can give you elation. And papa will give you experiences that are meant to hurt you. So Swamiji quoted a verse from the Gita saying, you know, for the jnani, really, that samachittatvam, that sameness of mind, is nityam, it's always there, even in the attainment of pleasure or pain. Then he went on to say, it's not that a jnani enjoys painful experiences or enjoys suffering, but there's objectivity there. And that objectivity, maturing, becoming mature enough to really have that objectivity in circumstances that are really painful and meant to be painful, he says, is a tall order. You can't take that for granted, you know? To be able to, in really difficult situations, to maintain that objectivity. Recognizing everything as Ishwara, and in the recognition of everything as Ishwara, to remain objective. To remain objective, you have to be recognizing everything as Ishwara. From the standpoint of Ajnani, he also said that even if you're jnani, that Ishwara vritti is not there for you, not a jnani, still, if you have that objectivity, that goes a long ways for the antakarna shuddhi, because you're more on top of the situation rather than being overwhelmed by it. So, developing that type of objectivity and having a mind that remains that samachittatvam, that sameness of mind in all these different types of experiences that the world tends to throw out one way or the other, takes time. It takes a lot of maturity, and it's not just overnight.
But it's inevitable. I mean, once you're in this pursuit,
it's inevitable in terms of the maturing process. How long that maturing takes place is not inevitable. How long?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jagadish says, even though there is a clear recognition I am the whole, how could I have ever thought that I am not the whole? Afterwards, there is still an identity with the body and the mind. Will there be a time when there is a constant identity with the whole, and a view of the jiva as being part of Ishvara. Well, whether you have, just if I'm understanding your question, Jagadisha, correctly, the identity with the body and the mind, what we call the upadis, is going to, well, will always be there as long as you have a body. It'll be there, but it'll be nitya. In other words, you don't gain knowledge and all of a sudden there's no sense of I-ness in the body or mind. That will always be there because the sukshma sharira, which reflects consciousness, as though we say it reflects, you know, is pervading the body, and so that sense of, you know, through the sense of touch, that sense of I will be there. And it'll be there with every vritti, every thought that you have. So always that will be there. But it's there as mitya, as opposed to satyam.
Yeah.
And so now, when you're not, so just to make that part clear. Now, in reference to, will there be a time when there is a constant identity with the whole and a view of the jiva as being part of Ishvara? That's always going to be your state of knowledge, and as long as your mind is not overwhelmed by some sort of raga dvesha, that sense of jivatvam is there, but it's there as mitya. Because the jiva, your experience is the experience as being part of Ishvara. Your experience, everything is Ishvara, this body, mind, sense organs is part of Ishvara. That's always your experience, and you kind of revel in that experience when there's nothing else going on in your mind. It's some sort of raga dvesha, and then to us that's a kind of a sadhana, or we just let the mind be the mind and don't bother much about it. So we don't even look at it. Really is taking me away from my knowledge. It's just like sometimes Swamiji has used the example that for somebody who is just a samsari, who doesn't have any self-knowledge of in terms of Vedanta, they don't need to walk around saying, I am the body, I am the body, I am the body, to keep remembering that they're the body. They don't have to do that. They don't have to remember that they're the body. They don't have to think that they're the body. They know they're the body, and everything they do and feel and think is based upon that knowledge. It's totally taken for granted. And your knowledge becomes that way also, where yourself, the self that you are, Brahman, is that knowledge, is the mind has totally assimilated that knowledge. So it's not, it doesn't have little areas where that knowledge isn't assimilated. See what I mean? So when that's the case, then as Swamiji once said many years ago, he said, your mind can do lots of funny things, but it doesn't do anything to your knowledge. You can have this thought or that thought. It's taking in billions of thoughts and perceptions every day, continually. So all kinds of things are going to be wafting through, but it doesn't do anything to you. So as long as it doesn't do anything to you, that means there's no ahankara there that has lost sight of your own being. So I think maybe to make it more clear, there's different levels of experience of Ishvara. Sometimes your mind, that's all it is, recognizing and reveling in Ishvara. Sometimes your mind is, sometimes something's happened to your mind and there's some sense of jivatvam there. But then when that's there in your knowledge. So it doesn't make any difference. It's just mitya. So whatever is coming up, whether it's meditative state or reveling in Ishvara or some jivatvam is coming up, the whole thing is mitya and nothing is happening to me. And that's constant. So I don't know. I hope that helps a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, that's in it. Jagadish just said, yes, viewing the body as mithya, that is there in satyam. That's the great thing to understand about satyam mithya. You can't... The word mithya has no real meaning for a person unless they've recognized the satyam.
Uh-huh.
You know, nothing can be mithya for you without recognizing satyam. Like even if I use the clay pot example, I could never call the pot mithya unless I've recognized the satyam clay, the clay as satyam, and the relationship between the clay. Okay. Unless I've recognized the relationship between the clay and the pot, right? But if I've never recognized the clay in relationship to the pot, there's no mithya. It's just one clay pot, that's all. I've not recognized that. So mithya, the use of the word mithya as something labeling my experience can't even be used really in a meaningful way unless I've recognized what is the satyam. Right? So in reference to my mind, the self is satyam. In reference to all of my whatever experience I have, the self is satyam. And that's what allows these experiences to be mithya. Otherwise the word mithya doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jagadish. That's nice. Yeah.
So the notion that I'm the body, that will always remain, except that I know that it's...
Not the notion, the sensation.
The sensation I
am. Of the body being the conscious being that you are.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is. It's like trying to have the pot not have the sense of being clay. Because the pot is clay. But that what it doesn't know is that the clay that it is also free of the pot. That's what it doesn't know.
That's the subtle issue.
Yeah, that's the issue. That's where the ignorance is. I was trying to get to that in the meditation today.
Yeah. This is how a football player must feel after the football game's finished.
What do you mean? Can you talk about objectivity versus understanding Ishvara? Well, I'll talk about it in the sense that Swamiji was talking about it in terms of your own personal day-to-day experience, all of the situations that take place in your life, big emotional situations, but all situations, to have an objectivity to where... You don't lose yourself in the situation. You don't have a subjective projection on the situation in terms of your raga dvesha. You're able to objectify the situation and then see it as part of Ishvara and then do what is to be done in the situation in terms of dharma. I'd say that's probably a good way to talk about it. Because otherwise, you are involved in any situation in terms only of your own raga dvesha, and that's very subjective. You're not involved in an objective way to see what actually is being asked for in that situation. So it becomes colored by your own subjectivity, so you lose your objectivity. So, and I think that's really what Swamiji was talking about, because he's had such a painful couple of years with his health situation. It has not been easy at all. But he told me once, you know, it's fine as long as I can keep on top of it.
Yeah.
On top of it means to be able to keep my objectivity. Can we say that is the same, ultimately, objectivity and understanding Ishvara? Not exactly. I wouldn't say so, because... You can have a deep understanding of Ishvara, but your vairagya is not complete. So when the vairagya is not complete, you find yourself kind of sucked into the situation in a very subjective way, rather than just seeing what Ishwara is asking for in this particular situation, that jivatvam is there because of a lack of vairagya. And vairagya is something that matures over time. I mean, you come into this birth with some natural... Everybody comes into the birth with some level, whatever level of maturity. We're talking about mumukshus, with some level of maturity and some level of vairagya that has caused you to be a mumukshu in the first place, you know. But that vairagya has to grow and mature to whatever degree it has to grow and mature, and that's going to be different for every person.
Yeah.
So you have knowledge and have clarity, but sometimes that clarity gets shrouded by your, as though shrouded by your, raga dvesha. I'd say by your lack of vairagya. Everything hasn't become like helium balloons for you yet. You know, Swamiji always uses that example of how helium balloons can be so precious for a little child, and sooner or later they let it go or it gets popped or something, and that's a really upsetting situation. But chances are great that for the adults who have the helium balloon, when it pops or gets lit off into the sky, it doesn't make any difference at all. Just whatever. So, is the world like helium balloons for you, or do you have some? You can't take vairagya lightly either. Vairagya needs to become thorough and multi-layered, just like your mind and experiences are multi-layered. It's very interesting to see as the vairagya matures.
Well, you can't command your vairagya to increase. It has to develop.
It increases naturally. You can work on it because every absence of it becomes sadhana for you. Because it causes pain, you know?
Yeah.
I sure did. I just seen your notes. All right, everybody. Let's call it a night. I'll see you next... See you on Thursday. Let's just take a moment and say our prayer. Om Swasti Prajapya Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahimnahi Shaha Ku Brahmane Pyashubamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Pavantu Kale Varshatu Parajanyaha Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yangsho Parahitaha Brahmana Santu Nirupayaha Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kaschit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityorma Amritangamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Harihi Om